All right, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Natalia.
And this is Till Death Do Us Part.
I have been staying up because I'm doing the thing where I'm getting back into an old habit where I love that me time, like at midnight, 1 a.m., where it's quiet and you can like edit the podcast or, you know, do something without judgment. Like, I don't even know what that would be, because it's not like I do anything that bad.
No, it's, there's something, I don't know what it is, but I know what you're talking about, because first of all, I was like addicted to that time during the pandemic, when that was really the only alone time I had, and when I was stuck in the house with a bunch of people. But even when I'm alone in the house during the day, there's something special about the nighttime.
Yeah.
I don't know. You kind of feel like Batman.
It's so true.
That was me last night. I was like clicking away on the keyboard, finishing up my story, and people were like trying to say goodnight to me. And I was like, yeah, whatever. Get out of my face.
I do love the darkness, even though it is like a beautiful day. And I do need to go outside and get vitamin D, like actual sunshine.
Real vitamin D, not the kind that comes in a pill.
Yeah, I do love those gloomy days. It's like vampire weather, where it's like dark and cloudy and kind of cold. I don't know. I really get off on that.
Absolutely. Nothing thrills me more than a rainy day that I can sit with a cup of hot tea and just with a good book. That's the way. Oh, speaking of tea, the tea that you sent me, the butterfly pea tea, A+.
Is it really good?
It's really good. And I've got to tell you, I made a little video so that I can edit and put on TikTok later. But you open the bag, it's not like crumpled up tea. When you open it, the flowers are like whole flowers.
That's what I like about it. Some bars and places will have it like mixed with cocktails and stuff to make it funky colors. And that's the only time I've ever had it. So it's just one of those things that I've always wanted for myself, but I never got for myself.
Highly recommend. So delicious. It was really nice. And I got to tell you, it's good either way. I do like it cold though. So I think I'm just going to be making pitchers of it iced, because it was delicious when it cooled off.
But they were really good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Do we have any housekeeping or things that we need to touch on before we jump in?
I know we have the fuck you corner, but I wanted to do a bless you corner for something. Oh. I'm not into like being positive.
Amen.
There are these patches and you can get them. I got these at Target, but they have like B12, they have Awake, and they also have these ones called Cycle. And I was having the worst cramps. I'm sure people don't want to hear this, but
fuck it. Let's normalize period talk. Let's go.
They are amazing. They actually really fucking work.
Nice.
It's a clear patch. It looks like a nicotine patch, to be totally honest, that you put on your skin. It releases literally just B12, or it's like menthol.
Oh.
And it's nice and it works.
I mean, that's a numbing agent. So they have Awake and they have Cycle. Is there like a mother brand company that makes both?
It's called The Good Patch. And they have one that you can put on your arm to help prevent hangovers, or if you are hungover.
The Good Patch. We'll send them to the Bless You corner.
And don't expect any. That's my one nice thing for 2022. And I'm done.
Maybe that's the one for spring. Maybe we'll come up with one more in the summer.
Yes.
So you can put the Good Patch. I'll put the Butterfly PT. And those two can sit in the Bless You corner for the spring.
For the spring. And then we're good for a while, right?
That's it. We'll leave it there.
As for housekeeping, I don't think I really have anything. I do have a couple of questions about Vegas.
Oh, ask away.
You met Billy and Alexis at the bar before going back up to your room. You, like, got a sandwich or whatever.
Yes.
I didn't hear that whole story.
Kevin, you better stock up on Aperol anytime Billy and Alexis are coming. Because Aperol spritzers are apparently their favorite. So I had my turkey sandwich. I had run into Alexis in the Paris bathroom. And it was a lot of people trying to talk to them. I just was kind of like chilling right next to them while they were having these conversations. But as we were leaving, I did make sure to like butt in and just say, listen, guys, I wanted to tell you, you guys did a great job with your presentation on Lisk. That's the Long Island serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to see you guys next time. Thank you. And Billy was just like, hey, what do you got there? And so I showed him, I'm like, it's a turkey sandwich. And I had met this other pediatric nurse from Virginia. And so he asked her because he was not interested in my turkey sandwich.
Oh,
he was like, yeah, he was not. He was like, eh. So he was like, what do you have? And she had waffles. He was all about those waffles. But the section of the casino that they were drinking in was a little bit bougie, and they did not allow you to eat on the floor in that section. Otherwise, my friend Amanda would have handed him a waffle. No problem. And so I said goodnight to Billy. He asked us about our food. I understand now he probably needed some food at that point. And then I said goodnight to Alexis. Pretty much it. Next time that I am able to converse with them. But I thought it would be interesting to get their perspective about whether or not we should be taking people's DNA the way we take footprints when you're born.
Paul Holes was asked this question a long time ago when he was being interviewed about GSK, and it was because people were apprehensive to give up their DNA
privacy,
Jed Match, yeah, and stuff, because they don't want the police department or the government to be tracking them, which, okay, that's their opinion. But Paul Holes made a really good point, which I don't know if it would coincide with this, but he said there's so much information when it comes to DNA that they don't really, it's not that they don't have a use for it, but they don't have a way to store it. Like a local police department or maybe even a local hospital wouldn't have a place to keep it. Like they only have so much room for evidence. They only have so much room to keep X, Y, and Z. That's not the case whatsoever. That's what he was answering. But I don't know how we would do that when babies are born, just because that is a lot of information to be able to store. We're not capable of doing it.
I think it's a two-part problem. You have the logistics of it, like you're saying, where do we store all this? However, we're moving forward with being able to condense information and store things. And the fact is that millions of people every year are storing baby cord blood for all sorts of reasons. So if we're storing that anyway, why aren't we just adding a code of that sample into a database the same way that we give you a social security number? And I know people are really like, yeah, my privacy, blah, blah, blah. I hate to break it to everyone. And I know people are going to argue with me, and feel free to argue with me. We can argue all day. The government can track you at any time. Unless you give birth to your child at home, off the grid, and never document their birth, we are followed from the minute we're born to the minute we die.
You're on the grid.
Through our phones, through all of our paperwork, through our footprints, everything. So, and I know what you're talking about because I now that you brought it up, I do remember listening to that section of where Paul Holes was talking about the privacy issues and where people bring that up. And I think another thing that he was saying is that when they pull up the DNA matches, they're not looking at your literal DNA. He was saying, we have neither the time. They just want to know how many of your markers matched how many of the markers over here on XYZ. So they're not even really looking at your DNA. They just want to know if a flag went up.
That's a really good way to put it. That makes it understandable too. Because I think a lot of people don't understand. It needs to be put in layman's terms.
It's about, is your DNA going to lead me to the person I am looking for? If you are the criminal, then yeah, you should be worried we're going to find your DNA. In which case, fuck you. And the other thing that he talked about was how much good is going to outweigh the bad.
Right.
So there's always going to be a scale of things. There's always going to be things that are bad within a good system. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always going to be bad cops. What, should we get rid of all police officers? No, of course not. You can't just say, well, because there's one bad of this, we should get rid of the system. If there's a chance that you could close and give justice to potentially thousands or tens of thousands of cases, you have to at least open the discussion before you start breaking it down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fine. I'll get them later. It'll give me something to bring up later. We'll move on. So I have quite the dark story today. It's a big one, and all the usual warnings, guys, you know how it is. We're gonna be pretty graphic. Today is gonna be a lot with kids, abduction, pedophile rings, murder, all of that. So if any of that is going to upset you, now's the time to check out, even though I don't know how you got here. Bye. My sources for today, I have, of course, our wonderful Wikipedia. I also have an article from the LA Times by Dean Murphy. I have an article by, I believe it's a European newspaper. It was hard to tell from the website. We'll put all the links in the episode. The only initials I could find for the paper were RFI. And a book that after I found out about this story, I went online, I bought the book, and I did read the whole thing.
Oh my, okay.
Yes. Today the story is about the Beast of Belgium, which may be about one man, or it may be about an entire conspiracy beast. We will find out. So, quick overview. Belgium is located in Western Europe. It's about the size of Maryland. They speak mostly Dutch, about 60%, and the other 40% of the country speaks French. 75% of the country identify as Roman Catholic. They do have a king, but they have a prime minister. So now in modern times, we know that's the one who's really pulling the strings. They do have a 99% literacy rate, so an educated country. But from what I could gather, there has been constant government upheaval and reformation since the 1970s, and that is ongoing even till today. They have been involved in, and not always directly, but indirectly, in so many international conflicts. You gotta go take a look. If you're interested,
okay.
They have a very interesting but complicated background. And it is not at all a stable government. Not that it's not safe, not that it, you know, they are a private people. They have very important values placed on like strong family structure, and they're hard workers. So like the general people of Belgium are good and strong, but their government has some real fucking problems. So important to note that at the time, we're going to go back into the 80s and 90s. At the time, the police structure was as follows. They had your local police that's still present today. They had your judicial police that's gone. They also had municipal police. Those are also gone. And they also had something called the gendarmerie. And that was a paramilitary force so that people just can relate to it a little better. It is what we would think of as the FBI. The gendarmerie were established only in 1992. Belgium did not have state police before that. And it's significant that they had only been a unit for 3 years when this case came to light. Since then, they have been dismantled. They are now replaced by the federal police, which is exactly like our FBI. So Belgium now only has local police and their federal police, and that's it. They don't no longer have all these little other subsets. So back then, they had a lot of hands in the kitchen, if you know what I mean. For our purposes, you just mainly keep in mind that you had the local police running the stuff in your neighborhood, and then later on, the gendarmerie, who were supposed to be the best of the best, come in as the FBI-ish force. Okay. In June of 1995, in the town of Liège in Belgium, 2 8-year-old girls, Julie Lejeune and Melissa Russo, were playing outside. It was a sunny day, and the two girls were playing on a bridge very near to their houses. This was not uncommon for them. But when they didn't come home, their parents called the police. There was a search, but they didn't find anything. 3 weeks went by, and since the parents did not feel that the local police were doing enough, they hired their own private investigator. This PI, in turn, hired a criminal profiler named Karine Hatzba, and she composed the following profile. She said that the abductor would be unemployed, would have a past record for abduction, and would be married with kids. So put a pin in that. Karine gave this profile to the police, but they did not use it. Melissa's father distributed 10,000 flyers. He spent the next year searching for her. He went beyond Belgium. He looked for her as far as Mexico.
Did they ever find anything? Like, was there a shoe or a piece of clothing? Like, nothing?
Nothing. Like, they went into thin air. And in 1995, so, I mean, and they were also 8. So, no cell phones, no, gone. Poof. Her father didn't find anything. Nothing came up. 2 months later, in August, on the opposite side of Belgium, 2 other girls disappeared from the town of Blankenburg. 17-year-old Anne Marchal and 18-year-old Effia Lambrix were having a sort of summer vacation, a getaway, with a group of their friends, and they vanished. They were last seen on security footage leaving a casino. Their friends did call the police, and they called their parents, but the police said that they were, quote, probably just off looking for a good time with boys.
Wow. That's, like, kind of a bold thing for a cop to say to a parent.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the 90s, am I right? I mean,
yeah.
Still a pretty ballsy thing to say to a parent. Yeah. So what happens next is that the gendarmerie, so this is, again, this is the FBI, and they are apart from those two local departments on the opposite sides of Belgium that had those two cases. The gendarmerie receive a letter at their headquarters from a woman named Janine Lawrence. And in this letter, she says that her son is holding two girls captive in his house. I want you to pin this because this is really going to piss you off later. Now, the police don't do anything about this letter.
Why?
You're going to find out. And there is an answer. We're going to come back to it. They don't do anything, even though the man that she named in this letter as her son was already someone that they were investigating. Okay.
I wish you could see my face right now.
I know. We're going to come back to this letter. So pin that letter. We can pin that with the criminal profile. Okay?
Okay.
On a Monday morning in May of 1996, 12-year-old Sabine Dardenne started to ride her bike to school. Sabine waved goodbye to her father, who watched her leave each morning until she pedaled out of sight. Sometimes her friend would bike with her, but on this morning, her friend was running late, so Sabine went on biking to school. I'm going to read to you what happened next in Sabine's own words. This is from her book. She continued on biking. She says, "The next second, I was literally swinging in midair with one hand around my mouth and another covering my eyes. In a flash, I'd been thrown inside. One moment I was pedaling, and the next moment I was inside the van. In just 1 second, I had completely disappeared from the outside world, although I didn't yet know it."
Wow. That's how fast it can happen.
And Sabine says that later, particularly her neighbor, Davine, who was supposed to bike with her that day, asked her, you know, why didn't you fight? Why didn't you kick? Why didn't you scream? And Sabine did all of those things. Once she was in the van, she did kick and she did scream. However, she was literally snatched off her bike. Her bike was later found, like, in the side ditch where they had pulled her off of it. Mm-hmm. But she was pulled right off of her bicycle. It literally, like she said, in midair. There was no time for her to do anything. She could kick and scream all she wanted once she was in the van. There was...
The creepy thing is they must have been watching her. Like, he must have had that move down to be so swift, like, to just do it.
Yes.
Ugh, creepy. Yeah.
So there were two men, and one was driving. One opened the side door and was able to use his whole upper body to snatch her. Later, Sabine learned that they had been watching her for a week. So they knew what time she generally left in the morning. So Sabine was abducted and she was held for 80 days.
Oh my God. Alive?
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously alive. I don't know why I said that. I'm just like shocked.
Mm-hmm. No, it's okay. I know. Her book about her experience is not graphic. However, I will tell you that she did suffer severe sexual abuse and torture the entire time.
How old was she?
She was 12.
Ugh.
She was allowed to have some paper and pencils where she was kept. And in order to mark the passage of time, she would make marks in her book. So this is how she marked the days that went by. And she would mark down an X on the days that he used her, which was daily. And on the days that were really bad, she would mark those days with two X's.
Oh my God.
She was also constantly beaten. She was brainwashed. And she was kept in a constant state of starvation.
Oh, for 80 days.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I'm like dying. She's 12. Like, I hate it when it's kids.
I know they're the worst. This monster kept her in a tiny hidden dungeon. He had built it hidden behind a false wall in his cellar. It was tiny. I believe it was about 9 feet wide by... like 9 feet long, across ways was maybe by 4 feet, and it wasn't more than 5 feet high. So not even tall enough that she could stand straight up. He did sometimes let her come out to walk around the house. However, he had brainwashed her from the get-go with stories that if she left the house, that the gang he worked for would kill her, that he was really her savior, that the gang wanted to kill her, but that he was keeping her hidden and that she should really be thankful. And of course, she was a child. He told her that originally the gang had kidnapped her because her father owed them money,
mm-hmm.
but that her parents didn't want to pay the ransom.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. He would let her write letters to her parents, and she thought he was mailing them, but he didn't.
Oh, man, that's fucked up.
He only gave her basically garbage, like canned food, moldy food, like expired food to eat when he did feed her, because a lot of times she wasn't fed. A lot of times she had to just stay in that dungeon. And that's where she was in this hellhole for the entire time that she was held captive. There were times where he was not in the house. And for those days, she would be chained to her bed in the cubbyhole.
Oh my gosh.
In August of 1996, Sabine was shocked when another girl was shoved into the hole with her. This was 14-year-old Leticia Delay. Leticia had been leaving the pool when, in broad daylight, she was also pulled into a white van and disappeared. This time, however, would be the last time that a girl was thrown into this nightmare. So let me go back to the lousy work being done by the gendarmerie. At this point, Belgium was infuriated over the amount of missing girls. So there was a special investigator that was called in. His name was Michel Demoulin, and he, my spicy jalapenos, is one of our heroes. Our second hero is a new judge that they appointed to run the investigation at this point, and his name is Jean-Marc Connerat. within days of being appointed, Desmoulins was like, fuck this shit. I don't know what the gendarmerie's been doing up until this point. He zeroed in on the monster.
Oh my God. Was the other guy like in on it or something? Like, what the fuck?
You are going to flip your shit, but hold on.
Okay. Ugh.
We're going to peel all of it apart.
Okay.
But here is the monster. 40-year-old, unemployed electrician, Marc Dutroux. He was immediately brought in for questioning, along with his accomplice, Mikhail Laliev, and his wife, Michelle Martine.
His wife? Okay.
Remember that criminal profile?
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It was spot on.
Oh.
Yeah. So his wife, Michelle Martine, she had been Dutroux's mistress when he was married to his first wife, Francois, who was the mother of his first two children, and who, by his own admission, he beat constantly.
Oh, wow. Okay. What a piece of shit.
Yeah, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
So he divorced his first wife. He marries his mistress, Michelle, goes on to have three children with Michelle. And get ready, because let me tell you, she is an absolute piece of shit.
Okay.
We'll start with Marc, and then we'll just smush them up all together. Marc Dutroux was 29 years old when in 1985, he abducted an 11-year-old with one of his buddies named Jean Van Petergem. Later that year, they abducted a 19-year-old. Now, I'm going to go through like a couple of instances where they did it. Like they went one after another for the next couple of months. None of these girls were given names. That's fine. I'm assuming they wanted anonymity. None of these victims, from my research, none of them were murdered, but they were all abducted, raped, and then like let go. So him and his buddy took the 11-year-old. Then a few months later, they took the 19-year-old.
Wow. Okay.
And according to Petergem, they had actually abducted two other girls prior to these, but those victims were never located, so they weren't prosecuted for those. Then these two assholes abduct another girl on December 14th, except this time his wife, Michelle, helped them.
Oh, what the? That's so bizarre. Is she a piece of shit, or did he like beat her into it, or?
Oh, she'll tell us why. She later testified and said why.
Okay.
And I don't believe anything she fucking says. She's a fucking monster.
Okay.
So that was December 14th, when supposedly that was her first time joining in. 4 days later, they abducted and raped a 15-year-old. So no cooling off time. 2 months later, in February, all three of them are arrested. And this is only because their buddy, Jean, had a big mouth. And thank God, all three of them are arrested. And all three are convicted in April of 1989. And were given the following sentences.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, so the sentences are, I mean, they're not great. They're not terrible. But here we go. Dutroux received a sentence of 13 and a half years. His buddy Petergem got 6.5. And the wife, Michelle, received 5 years.
Well, I don't understand how they come up with these numbers.
Dutroux, who was given 13 and a half years after serving only 3 years in prison. The Belgian prime minister of the time released Dutroux.
What?
This was against the advice of both the public prosecutor and the prison psychiatrist.
So is he on it too or something? Like,
hold on. while that might seem like not a big detail, because criminals get released early all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to pin this for later, because you are maybe going to see how the government was protecting Dutroux the entire time.
No.
Yes?
No.
Back to Dutroux, okay? While he's in jail that first time, during those 3 years, he convinces the medical examiner he's mentally ill, which, okay, debatable, but let me tell you where the problem is.
Well, he's something, but...
Well, yes, which I don't mind the diagnosis, but here's what he did with that diagnosis, which absolutely somehow in Belgium, somebody needs to close this fucking loophole. He was able to collect disability from the Belgian government for $1,200 a month.
That is a ton of money.
Oh, yes, I did the conversion for all of you. That was in the 90s. So today, that comes out to roughly $2,700 a month.
And I'm sure he had free healthcare and free services and whatever else they have.
Oh, just wait.
I can't wait anymore. I can't win anymore. I'm sorry.
There's so many. But I mean, so with that amount of money, it's really no surprise that he had 7 houses.
Oh, what?
Yes, 7 houses. And the government continued giving him assistance through the entire case, all the way up to the trial in our time that we will flash forward to after the Sabine incident. Okay, so this is, I don't know, maybe another clue that Dutroux is actually part of a huge pedophile ring. And I know that some people are already starting to roll their eyes. I get it, guys. I'm not a conspiracy person, but wait until you hear it all, because this is nothing.
What is he doing in those 7 houses? I mean, what do you think is going on, people?
There is so much more. This is going to seem like nothing. This is going to seem like just an error in paperwork. But keep in mind, we have the early release, we have government money, and we have 7 houses that he put all in his own name as an unemployed electrician.
What?
Okay. So where's the fucking IRS? Where's the banks that approved all those deeds?
The, like, left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, I guess, in the government? I don't...
Maybe. So, okay. So just a bunch of little things right now. Even worse, while he's in prison, convincing the examiner about these diagnoses, he also convinces the examiner to give him sleeping pills. And he used those exact sleeping pills to drug his victims. So let us head back to that police interrogation room where Desmoulins brought in Dutroux to confess. Now, Dutroux isn't saying shit, but his partner and his wife broke down immediately.
Yeah, because they're dumb at that. Nothing. Just go on.
Yeah. Once Desmoulins confronted Dutroux with the information that his partners spilled, Dutroux shocked everyone when he agreed to lead them not just to Leticia, who had been missing for 6 days, but also to Sabine, whom everybody had, of course, started to assume was dead. Because it had been 80 days.
Well, yeah, she's been gone. Nothing. No trace.
No trace. Dutroux took the police to the cellar of one of his houses. And behind the false wall, he showed them the dungeon. So that little space that he had shoved the two girls into. He pushes the false wall away. he's, you know, shows the cops, and the cops are telling the girls to come out. But this is what's really heartbreaking. The girls were so brainwashed by Dutro that they wouldn't come out. They were afraid that he was maybe tricking them or testing them. They didn't know what to do. The police couldn't make them come out.
Oh, no.
Dutro himself had to get down and tell them that it was okay. Oh. It wasn't until the girls saw Dutro that they finally crawled out. And when they did, they said to him, thank you.
That's terrible.
They didn't know. They came out and that was the first thing they thought of, because they thought that it was him who set them free. That's how bad he had brainwashed them.
Oh, I feel sick. Oh, God. I hate him.
He's awful. After this, the police uncovered the remains of the 2 8-year-olds, Melissa and Julie. They had been buried in the backyard of one of the other houses. The autopsy showed that they had starved to death.
Aww.
Yeah. Back in 1995, Dutro had been briefly incarcerated for car theft.
That's terrible.
But before he went to jail, he instructed his wife, Michelle, to feed the girls. Michelle knew all about this the entire time. She knew about the girls. She knew about the dungeon. She knew all about this. He left her with instructions to feed them. Michelle told the police she was too scared to go into the dungeon. So what she did instead was push the food through the front of the door, and she left. The little girls were chained to their beds and couldn't reach the food. And so they starved, even though they could see the food.
That's so terrible. What a piece of shit.
Yes, she is a monster in her own right. I don't give a fuck what she says. So, a wife, a mother, and she was a school teacher.
What? She's afraid of 2 kids, but she's a school teacher? I mean, and they're chained to a bed. What are you afraid they're going to do?
And what the fuck are you afraid of? You're afraid of 2 little girls that you know your husband's continually raping? Ugh. It's worse. She's also the one who was holding the camera when Dutro filmed himself building the dungeon and raping girls. Now, you might be thinking, what tapes are you talking about, Natalia?
I didn't even catch that. I'm like still thinking about this bitch.
This bitch. There's so much. I'm only pushing forward because there's so much, and we're not even through half of it.
Okay.
So remember way back when I told you to put a pin in that letter that Dutro's mother sent in?
Yeah.
So the gendarmerie had gotten that letter from Dutro's mother. And I'm guessing at that point, some people might have been listening and thought, well, you can't investigate every fucking crackpot tip that comes in. I get that. The thing is that the letter not only said, my son is Marc Dutro, the gendarmerie already had an open file on Marc Dutro. And here, my spicy friends, is when the pieces will click together. Because the gendarmerie had been approached by a tenant in Dutro's building where he was living with his wife and kids. And this tenant had come forward to report suspicious behavior. The gendarmerie made this man their informant, or did they just want to make him feel important to keep him from talking to other sources? Because the thing is, this man told the gendarmerie that Dutro repeatedly asked him for help in abducting girls.
What?
Mm-hmm. Dutro told this man that his ultimate fantasy was to take girls underground, make them into sex slaves, where he would rule over them like some kind of fucking mole king.
What? I mean, it's so outrageous.
Yeah. It's like some sick fucking movie. Well, I mean, so they believed him enough to make him an informant. They didn't brush him off. And I'm not even going into all the things he told them. He came to them with a lot of information. So
yeah,
the gendarmerie had an entire fucking case file on Marc Dutroux before that letter ever arrived.
So why didn't they ever jump the gun and, like, just arrest him?
Right. So if they already had his name and they have an open file, he's a suspect, why did they ignore the letter? Here's the really tragic thing. We now know from the timeline that if they had followed up that letter, they would have found Julie and Melissa because they were still alive at that time.
Oh, no. Fuck.
It was at that time, it was really shortly after they received that letter, that Dutroux got pinched by the local police for car theft. And at that time, the local police obtained a search warrant for his house, believing that he was part of a larger car smuggling operation. The gendarmerie got wind of this. They went to the judge and said, "Wait, don't send the local police. Let us do the search." Why would they do that? Okay, well, maybe they don't want the local police to blow their cover or whatever. So the gendarmerie searched Dutroux's house. The house Julie and Melissa were in. Get this. They didn't search it once. They searched it twice. They didn't find the hidden dungeon. You know what they did find? In the basement, they found vaginal cream, chains, and gynecological speculums. Like the kind they use for pap smears and procedures during female appointments. If there's any male listeners who don't know what speculums they use, don't go Googling them, guys. Don't flag yourselves. There are a lot of things that I feel strongly about in life. And one of them is that you should need a medical license to buy a vaginal speculum. I cannot, for the life of me, imagine a reason that anyone other than a doctor or a midwife would need one.
Why didn't they say that that's suspicious? Like, can I ask, was it because the people that went to go investigate were men and did not know what a speculum was? Is that, like, just being ignorant? I don't know.
Mm-mm. No, it's not ignorance. That was all clocked in as evidence because that all came to light later. The lead investigator for the gendarmerie at the time was René Michaud. He brought with him during this search a local locksmith.
Okay.
During the search, the locksmith said that he thought he could hear children screaming.
What?
Yeah, it gets worse. The investigator told him he was hearing things, or maybe that the screaming must have been children playing outside. When the locksmith insisted on searching for the source of the sound, Michaud said, and I quote, "Who is the policeman here? You or me?"
That's fucked up.
It is because they did not continue to search that Julie and Melissa died instead of being found. So let's tally up the conspiracy points. We've got early release, government money, 7 houses in his name, although he's unemployed, no follow-up to the letter, the gendarmerie take over a search that was not in their jurisdiction, but still, supposedly, find nothing. And I don't say supposedly because of the screaming that the locksmith heard. Although we can now add the screaming to the list.
It sounds like a sex ring.
It is definitely suspicious that what is essentially the FBI did not want to investigate the sound of children screaming in the house of a convicted sex offender that they already happen to have an open file on.
There's a difference. I mean, I don't have children, but I know the difference between a children's scream or a baby cry. Like, there's a difference in a baby crying because it's hungry and a baby crying or a kid screaming because it's hurting, you know? Like,
well, so I will say this, both because I was a very weird child and also because if you also have weird children like I do, there are times when kids play weird games and will yell for help that they're just playing. So even if you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, which I'm not going to fucking do, but if any of the listeners want to give them the benefit of the doubt that, well, maybe the screaming did sound far away, or maybe they heard the screaming, but the screaming stopped, or maybe they heard the screaming, but maybe even if they had looked, they wouldn't have found the girls. Okay. The problem is, I'm about to tell you what the absolute smoking gun is.
Okay.
Renee Michaud found something else that day that he purposefully marked as unimportant. And if you're not already sitting down, you need to.
I actually just sat down. I was standing up for a little minute because I was mad.
You need to sit down because...
Okay.
Renee Michaud, in that house during those two searches, found and marked as unimportant 100 videotapes.
100?
100. 4 years later. So this is way later, but I'm going to let you know now what are on those tapes. Because 4 years later, they did finally see what was on those tapes.
Ugh.
It shows Dutroux building the hidden cellar in his house where he would later hide the abducted children. Another tape, many other tapes, were child sex abuse videos. Another couple of tapes show him raping girls himself. And these were all videos that his stupid piece of shit wife, Michelle, was holding the camera for. So when I said she was holding the camera, these are the videos that she filmed. And another tape was a recording of all the news conferences where the parents of the missing girls had gone on TV and pleaded for the return of their daughters.
I think that's worse. I don't know.
It's so dark and it's so awful.
I don't know why, but I feel like that's worse.
Well, I kind of feel like that's kind of just ties the bow over all of it. Like if all of it didn't tell you where that was heading, like, sure as fuck, you know where his mind was at the end. So now I want you to take that whole list and you're going to add that to what Dutroux says later. And you can decide whether the authorities were involved in covering up a pedophile trafficking ring that involved some of the highest ranking members of the government. And if you're shocked that Michaud marked these tapes as unimportant, you're going to lose your fucking mind when I tell you that he allegedly returned some of those tapes directly back to Dutroux himself, and those tapes were never viewed. There were tapes that were marked as evidence that have since then disappeared and have never been recovered. They're gone. Does anybody want to tell me now that there's nothing fishy going on? Because this is a little much for me. If you want something else, no problem. I have more.
Oh, God.
Remember Judge Conorat, our hero who got the wheels turning in this investigation?
Yeah.
When this was all really coming out, the government decided to remove him from the case.
What? Because he knew too much.
Yes. But they put a new judge in, and the new judge refused to test any DNA that they found inside Dutroux's dungeon.
Oh.
So we will never know how many people went through there, or even how many other girls maybe were in there. Judge Conorat eventually testified in court in 2004, and he broke down crying on the stand, saying that he has so many death threats against him. He has to drive in a bulletproof car and has personal security guards because he tried to expose what he calls the child sex mafia.
Good God.
More than 20 key witnesses in the Dutroux case have died in bizarre ways. I'm not talking about, like, they just died in their sleep. I just picked some of the ones that were really interesting. We have a man. He rented a garage near Dutroux. He came forward. He said he had information.
Yeah.
They found his foot in a river. Never found the rest of him.
Holy fuck.
Mm-hmm. We have a police officer, Poncelet. He was investigating that original car smuggling ring. And then he got wrapped up in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
He was shot to death during his night shift. I know people are going to be like, but he was a cop. Yeah, but he wasn't actually out on the streets. He was in the office doing paperwork. So there was an informant also who 2 days before testifying dropped dead. They later found a sedative had been slipped into his asthma inhaler.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
There were at least 2 quote-unquote, suicides. I'm not even going to get into the details of those. And there were at least 2 supposed car accidents where I read a little bit into them. Basically, it looks like the people ran straight into trees or bridge railings. So, yeah.
That coincidences do happen, but not like this. Not over and over and over and over again, you know?
20 coincidences.
Yeah, it doesn't happen 20 times.
Yeah. There were a lot of other key people, maybe like another 10 or 15 people related to the case who died, but they just weren't witnesses. And I couldn't list them all. There's so much more that went into this case that I could not fit into this episode. I can't even go into it all. WikiLeaks reports that in 2009, they published what they call the Dutroux dossier. And according to them, the Belgian government is continuously trying to take it down. According to the Belgian government, they're only trying to do so because they say that the document is inaccurate and that there's too many, quote, innocent names that shouldn't be exposed in the document. Take that as you will. Back to 1996, my friends, when Sabine and Leticia were rescued from that fucking hellhole. The case was far from over. The investigation exploded. A week after they found the bodies of Anne and Effia, those were the 17 and 18-year-old girls that they were last seen coming out of that casino. Their autopsies showed that they had, in the end, been drugged, wrapped in plastic, and buried alive. Little Melissa, so the 8-year-old, after it was recovered, she was not allowed to be identified by her parents.
Why?
So this one, this part was really hard for me. So bear with me if I sound like I'm going to cry because I'm sorry. This one hit me really hard as a parent. The police wouldn't let them identify her body. I couldn't find out like a direct quote from them about why. I assume that they fed them some kind of bullshit, like you don't want to see your daughter that way or whatever else. However, when that's your kid, that's your right.
Mm. Yeah.
They can tell you you don't want to. We don't recommend it. It's really bad. However, at the end of the day, when you're done doing whatever you need to do for the investigation, the parents have the right. But what's really awful about this piece is that the police told the parents Dutroux identified her, and that's enough for us.
What?
Yeah.
Wait. Dutroux identified her, and that's enough for us.
Mm-hmm. So we let her rapist and her murderer tell us that it was her body. We don't need you to tell us. Her autopsy showed that she had been kept and used for a very long period of time, but the police did not DNA test anything. And so we'll never know if Dutroux was the only one involved or if there were others. The public became aware that the police had royally fucked up and that they had been aware of Dutroux, Julie and Melissa's death, and the torture and rape of Sabine and Leticia were completely avoidable. So in October of 1996, there was a national demonstration, what they called the White March for the Missing Children of Belgium. There were over 300,000 people marching. The Belgian citizens were infuriated. They were in an uproar over the scandals in their government, the way the police mishandled the case, and the possibility that the countrywide pedophile ring was being run right under their noses.
Wow.
Later on, both Sabine and Leticia testified in court against Dutroux. And that courage obviously is incredible. When Sabine left the courtroom, the reporters asked her what she thought of Dutroux's apologies. And Sabine said, "I hope he chokes on it."
Oh.
So good for her.
I like it.
Yep. We should note that Sabine herself does not buy into the conspiracy. She believes that Dutroux made up what he later says as part of his monstrous ego. My impression from her book is that she's an incredibly strong woman, and I cannot imagine what that costs a person to overcome what she went through.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely respect her perspective. I think she did an amazing job writing her book. It was very powerful. So my opinions here are only that, just my opinions based on what I read, my research, and to date, they are only conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Dutroux claimed that he was part of a human trafficking operation between Slovakia, the Czech Republic, and Western Europe. He claimed that this operation involved many people, police officers, bankers, doctors, businessmen, high-level Belgian politicians. And this operation supposedly included car theft and smuggling.
Mm-hmm.
The authorities have maintained that the different crimes, the multiple countries, the differences in the language translations have made it exceedingly difficult to connect any of the stories together. There are supposedly leaked documents on WikiLeaks showing large sums of money deposited into his wife's account from foreign countries. But I did not go looking for these. I don't know if they exist.
Okay.
Go look if you want. Supposedly. They're there. Supposedly. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Dutroux's trial, like I said, didn't start till 7 years after his arrest, which is horrendous given the crimes he committed and the fact that he led them to his dungeon. He led them to those girls. I mean, they knew what he did. There was no reason it should have taken 7 years for that to get to trial.
Yeah.
They made it so that it took as long as possible. And so that a lot of people died so that they couldn't testify.
What was he doing for 7 years? Was that when he was in jail or no?
Yeah, I mean, he was locked up during that time. He was locked up and telling people, listen, I'm not the only one. He was giving up names. But I mean, nothing was happening, you know? I mean, it was just floating in the ether. The parents were furious. They were like, we feel like the government's not doing anything. What's going to happen? Is anything going to happen? His wife testified against him. So here we're going to go. We said at the beginning, why did she join in? Like when it was that way back when in the 80s, when he buddied up with that guy to start abducting and raping those girls. So she went on the stand and she said that Dutroux told her, it's easier if I just abduct and rape these girls. You don't want me to start affairs. It's going to take time and my resources away from you. And so she says that she bought into that.
Okay, what? What?
Right. I mean, he may very well have said that. I can imagine him saying that. He's a piece of shit. However, she painted herself out to be, oh, I'm just a victim. Kind of like Carla Homolka, right? Like these women who go along and you don't find out till later that they were really part of it all along. I don't believe shit that Michelle said. Like, she was a monster from the beginning. You knew. Like, as far as I'm concerned, she should be serving a life sentence too. But she very much painted herself out to be, oh, he just as much abused me. I'm just a poor victim in all this too. Kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
The trial lasted 3 months and then the jury deliberated for 3 days. Sadly, the death penalty was abolished in 1996 in Belgium. Dutroux received a maximum life sentence while Michel Martin and his partner Laliev each received 30 years. 16 years into her sentence, Michel Martin was paroled and released. At first, she went to a convent.
A convent?
It was like some kind of stipulation. She couldn't go released into like the general public. Like, whatever, fine. Go into a convent. Don't be around children. Fine. But when the convent was sold, let me tell you where she went. A retired judge converted his farmhouse, and that's where she now lives.
Really?
A retired judge. I cannot.
That's so weird.
It's too much for me. In 2013, Dutroux requested to be released on house arrest with a monitoring anklet. He was denied.
Yeah.
Since then, he has successfully appealed for a reassessment of his mental status. So, in 2020, he was set for 3 psychiatrists to reassess him and determine whether he is still dangerous. That didn't happen because of COVID. Here's my thing. Why the fuck does that matter? He's only been in jail 25 years. Fuck him. He killed those girls.
He can rot in there for all I care.
He tortured and raped children. Why should he be allowed out? I don't give a fuck if he's not dangerous anymore. He's supposed to be punished for what he did. Why the fuck would I care if he is quote unquote cleared by a government that has all along been lenient, if not outright protecting him? We can only hope that the victims and the family of the victims and that the people of Belgium will continue to speak out against his even possible release so that this fucking monster will never see the light of day. Marc Dutroux is currently in solitary confinement.
Good.
And that is the story of the Beast of Belgium.
I'm upset at Belgium. I don't know.
I know. It's weird. I also thought, like, oh, Belgium. That sounds cute. Don't they make nice chocolate?
Yeah. And, like, coffee or something. I feel like they're such a nice country. But
I don't know where I got that idea, but and the whole thing is upsetting. Whether or not the government was actively protecting him, the police clearly fucked that up to such a degree that I cannot just chalk it up to incompetence. And this was like the 2000s when that new judge was saying, no, we don't need to test the DNA.
Yeah.
There was so much, I can't even tell you, Steph, so many more people implicated, so many more countries, so many more sub-stories that I could not even get into. People can, if they really want to go dive into those holes, there's so much out there.
Yeah.
There's some very, very dark, dark holes on the internet.
Was it the 90s when they, like, didn't know about DNA?
No, because those rulings on the DNA, that stuff was resubmitted for DNA testing when, like, that was in the early 2000s. It is so massive and so fucking twisted. Even if you just whittle it down to Dutroux himself and that case, the way that the police handled themselves with the parents, like, all of it was so fucked up. I don't know how to put it. Our own government's so fucked up that, I mean, it's kind of like calling the kettle black. Look at all the shit that happened with Epstein right here. You know what I mean?
Ugh.
So I will say, I mean, we do have two survivors. I read Sabine's book and you are able to find like a good amount of information on Sabine. She's pretty vocal. She's really passionate about speaking for victims.
I was going to ask, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was kind of curious about what she's up to now.
She's very public. You can find out lots of stuff about her, and she's published lots of things, and she's in the public eye. She is very vocal about what happened to her. On the other hand, Leticia, you cannot barely find anything about her, and that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, they have a right to make their own choices about what happened to them.
Yeah.
That's where they are now. I mean, it was the only thing I could take away from that could help me sort of put it to bed when I was finished with the case.
Other countries have beast of so-and-so or whatever. So it sounds like a one person.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a one man, right? It's not until you get into it. And I mean, it really involved me going on so many like side stories. And then I had to like stop, read Sabine's book, look at it from a different perspective, come back to the case, write it for our story like that. So it involved like so much. So
there's a lot of layers.
There's a lot of layers. There's a lot I left out. at least there was that one little golden thread, that person who survived and came out and said, he didn't take everything away from me. I came out of that and I became a whole person and I am okay now and I am successful now. And, you know, he didn't rob me of my life. And, you know, it was, I mean, I don't want to put this in the wrong words. I don't want to be like, oh, it's good to hear that, because I mean, obviously it's a terrible, awful thing. And I'm sure it's not something that ever, you can't ever forget something like that. It's always going to be a struggle, but she's dealing with it in an incredible way. And that's an incredible thing for a victim like that to be so vocal and to try and tell people her story and advocate for others. So that was the one little thing that we can at least try to help us put this behind us.
That is cool. That is an amazing story. It sounds like a movie.
But yeah, so many unbelievable things. So many shocking pieces that you're like, this cannot be real. But oh God, we do need some kind of, I know they say this on MFM, but some kind of fucking like palate cleanser. Like, what can we just?
I have, well, a podcast for palate cleanser, Unsolved Mysteries.
Ooh, okay.
It's really good. It has okay. music from the TV show, so it's very creepy, of course. I don't know why, but ever since I was a kid and, you know, the like theme music, the second that comes on, it like brings me back to when I was like 10 or whenever it was. And it just like gives me chills. But there's some really good stories on there that aren't necessarily true crime, but they're just, you know, the unsolved mysteries. And some of them have updates to other unsolved mysteries, which I love, because, you know, sometimes you think about them for like your whole life and you're like, whatever happened to so-and-so. And then on Hulu has Jessica Biel, and it's the Candy Montgomery story. It's really good.
Yes. Oh, okay. Thank you. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up, because I saw the trailer for that. I fucking love Jessica Biel. Came back out of fucking nowhere with, oh shit, what's the show with Paulman? Oh my God, tell me stuff. What's the one? And it has three seasons Netflix. And she's only in the first season.
Sinner?
Yes, yes. Oh, where he's a detective.
Yeah.
The Sinner. Okay, yes, yes. So she came back, blew me out of the water with that. And then when I saw her in this trailer, at first, I didn't recognize her. And at the end, when they show her name in the trailer, I was like, wait. I got to rewind this. Where the fuck is Jessica Biel? It looks amazing. It is really so I'm good. Glad you said it was good. Excellent. If anyone's interested, and just one more thing we can throw in for a little palate cleanser that's not really it's not true crime at all, but I'm very excited. It's coming back at the end of this month. The next installment of Stranger Things yes. drops May 27th. It's going to be the first part of the last ever season of Stranger Things. They're going to release the second part, which will be the last ever part, on July 1st. So May 27th, very excited to finally see where the hell fucking Hopper went, right? I think he went to Russia, but we'll find out. So there you go. Some TV, guys. That's it. Try to get outside and get some vitamin D. Don't be like us. Troll. Don't be fucking vampires.
Like me. Spicy jalapeno.
You better fucking believe it. Holy jalapenos, for sure.
I love that.
Stay spicy.
I love it.
All right.
I will talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Stephanie, remember when we first started the podcast and we were clueless about where to start?
I'm pretty sure we're all clueless, Natalia, but lucky for you, I knew the perfect place to start, Anchor.
We are lucky that we found Anchor, and even more lucky that we found each other. But our listeners don't need luck. Now that they know, if they want to start their own podcast, Anchor is the way to go.
Anchor is everything you need to have a podcast. With both a desktop and mobile app, we can record, edit, and launch all of our content within one program. Natalia and I think of Anchor as our daddy.
Daddy Anchor gives us one easy place where we can build all the episodes, and it automatically launches to all the best listening platforms like Spotify and Apple. It's my favorite kind of relationship. Anchor gives me everything I want, and it's free.
When you're ready to start a podcast, Anchor is going to make it easy. And then you will all realize how two armchair detectives like us managed to pull this off. Available on the App Store, Google Store, basically anywhere where you do a Google search, you can find it right there. Hey everyone, I wanted to jump on here real quick and let everyone know how they can get a hold of us. Of course, we are on all social media channels. We're on TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you want to send us a message, tilldeathdouspartpodcast@gmail.com. And we're much more active on Instagram, tilldeathdouspartpodcast. If you have sent us a message and we haven't either responded or heard back from us, do not feel bad. It is not your fault. It is definitely, it's Natalia's fault. And with that being said, follow, subscribe, review, share, all those fun things. See you later.